This episode is part of the Pool's Local Officials Stronger Together podcast series. It's one way we serve local officials through integrity, public service, fiscal responsibility, and operational excellence.
As always, please direct specific questions about coverage to your risk management advisor.
Welcome to episode 30 in the Risk Pool's Stronger Together podcast series. Today's episode is about the practical and legal challenges related to hiring remote employees. As always, I'm going to give you some basic information on our topic, interview some experts in the subject, in this case, three Risk Pool employees, and then give you some action items at the end so you'll get everything you can from our partnership. How did the subject of remote workers come up? Austin Bleese, the city manager of Jersey Village and one of the Risk Pool's board members, actually brought it up to me at a board meeting. He had recently hired a remote employee, and he asked us to give some pointers to those who also might be considering doing that. What do the remote work stats look like? Well, according to Forbes magazine, as of 2023, 13% of full-time employees work exclusively from home, while almost a third work a hybrid schedule. So our discussion today will focus really on those who work exclusively from a remote location, or almost exclusively. I'll be visiting with Melinda Walter, the Pool's People Operations Manager, Brittany Miller, one of our in-house attorneys, who's our employment law specialist, and Phil English, our Workers' Compensation Claims Manager. Each of them are a wealth of knowledge in their areas of expertise, so let's jump right in. I'm joined by Melinda Walter, who we've had on the podcast before. Welcome, Melinda.
Thanks, Scott. It's great to be here.
Awesome. We're so glad to have you. So we're talking about remote work for city employees or other local government employees. And I think one of the things that you can best help us with are, what are some of the tips for managing remote workers? I think one of the biggest fears that managers and or management at companies have is this person going to be working? Is this person going to be doing the same amount of work? And how can we manage that? So do you have some thoughts that can help a city and their managers work through that?
I do. Managing in a remote environment can be extremely challenging. I think a lot of people assume, well, you're already a manager, so you can. It's just managing in a different location. That's not necessarily the case. You know, some people have that fear that you just said that, okay, people aren't going to be doing their work. And so they're using every tool that they can. They're looking, you know, looking on Teams. Are they showing active? But really what you've got to look at is the work output. Are they getting their job done? And perhaps if it's a position that answers calls, maybe you're able to pull data from your IT department to review how many calls are being answered in a day. And that's something you probably review anyway, whether they're at work or at home. It's still the same information that you would be reviewing. But managing in a remote environment means you also have to be very intentional about that management. When you're in the same building or in the same location as someone, you can pass by their desk. You can see what they're working on. You run into them in the break room or in the hallway. And you have those personal connections then because you can ask about their day. You ask about their family. Those quote unquote seeing each other are automatically built into the day. In a remote environment, obviously that doesn't happen. So that means setting aside time to reach out to your employee, to have that conversation with them, to ask them how they're doing, to see how things are going. So it's not only making sure that the workload is getting done, but it's also maintaining that relationship with them.
I think that is so important. I mean, I think that probably is going to be the biggest takeaway from this podcast. With all the good information that we'll get from the folks we're talking to, I think that's probably the most important thing. I started as a full-time employee with the Risk Pool in 2021 during the pandemic. And so I've yet to experience everybody, quote, in the office. And I think it's hard. I think it's hard to assimilate into an organization when you don't have the things that you just talked about, just the casual conversations, just the knocking on someone's door to ask them a question. So I want you to keep going with that thought, but I just want to say, I think that's probably the most important thing is that relationship.
I completely agree, because at the end of the day, that's part of the job satisfaction that employees have, is feeling like they're part of a team or part of something. And when you're working at home alone, that can get missed. And it really starts in the beginning of the employment. It starts with the onboarding. It starts with infusing your company culture or your city culture at the beginning, at the very beginning, and then continuing that on. It's really the leaders that are setting the tone for that culture.
What you've said is really amazing tips to make sure that the people are part of your organization. What are other ways that you can ensure that the culture is communicated to that employee so that they know what's expected of them? And I think expected or expectations is a really good word. It's just like most things with employment law, right? Which is, you set a job description and you have essential job functions that have to be performed. But how do you make that person understand the way in which you want those duties performed?
I think that goes back to those regular communications and reviewing the work that they perform. And maybe that's reaching out to some of the people that they communicate with. For instance, in my area, I work in the people operations department, but we regularly interact with payroll. So maybe that's me as the manager reaching out to the manager over payroll and having regular conversations. Hey, how are things going between our staff? Are we hitting the mark? Is everything flowing smoothly? Is it working the way we think it should be working? Is the communication appropriate, whether it's appropriate tone, a length of time, all of those things? So it's not only your interaction with your own staff, but interaction with other departments and checking in and seeing how it's going and using that feedback to provide coaching opportunities to your staff.
Thanks, Melinda, for sharing those tips. The tips apply to a remote employee in Texas or one from out of state. And we know that for an in-state remote employee, most federal and state employment laws apply just as though the person were working in an office. But what about for out-of-state employees? There are all kinds of pitfalls related to that. And I now want to welcome Brittany to tell us a little bit more about that aspect of it. Brittany, what if a remote employee is out of state? How does that affect which laws might apply to them?
So which employment laws that apply in the remote context depends on where the employee is physically located, i.e. where is their butt sitting in a chair, and whether that employee establishes residency in that state. So it doesn't matter that you, the city, only operate in Texas. If you have staff logging in remotely from, say, California, then for that employee, and in some cases, all employees, you could be subject to all of California's employment laws.
Okay, so that's interesting right there. You're saying that it might be the case that if one employee who is remote is subject to a certain law, that might make all of your employees subject to that law as well, even if they are not remote?
It's possible, because if you are establishing an office out of state, then that state can enforce their employment laws on all of your offices.
Oh, wow. Now, that's really interesting, because Texas is typically a lot more lax than a lot of other states. Okay, cool. So keep going about what you were saying about other laws that are, how the laws apply.
Okay. So the other big issue comes up is taxation. So Texas, we don't have income taxes, but a lot of other states do. So if, like, Wisconsin finds that an individual is both domiciled and a resident of Wisconsin, then all income, regardless of where they are physically working, is subject to Wisconsin taxes. Now, if they're just there for a short period of time, if they perform enough work over $2,000, then they have to file a tax return in the state of Wisconsin. Oklahoma similarly requires that prior residents and non-residents file Oklahoma income tax forms for income earned in that state of over $1,000. Additionally, all states treat employee benefits a little bit differently in the taxation degrees. So that's your 457 contributions, pension funds, company vehicles, cell phone allowances, things along those lines.
So this is really a serious obligation of a city or other employer who's going to employ somebody who's out of state. And for a small city, that might be an almost untenable proposition to have to deal with all that. And for a larger city that has an HR department, it certainly would be very complicated. Why can't a city as an employer just designate this remote employee as an independent contractor and just say, y'all deal with whatever and we'll just cut you a check and send you the appropriate tax form and go on?
Well, that sounds like a good idea in theory, but the laws don't actually work that way. Under the Fair Labor and Standards Act, which is a federal law, there are a number of requirements of employers to pay minimum wage, time requirements, all such things for their employees. Now, independent contractors are generally not subject to those, but the Department of Labor really does care whether you're misclassifying an individual as an independent contractor when they're really an employee. And there's some new regulations that were just published in January of this year and go into effect on March 11th of this year that will apply an economic reality test to determine whether a worker has been properly classified as an independent contractor or if they're really an employee.
Thanks for being here, Brittany. That's a lot to think about, and we barely even scratched the surface. One thing I will do is link below the podcast to a Department of Labor FAQ on that new independent contractor versus employee rules. Phil, what do you see as the top three workers' comp issues that a city official should be aware of? I think the first one we talked about was that workers' comp applies anywhere, whether they're at the office or at home, right?
That is correct. Workers' compensation coverage in Texas for political subdivisions is for all employees. There wouldn't be a requirement to be in the office or a remote worker one way or the other. So the coverage would be there. So that is something that we would at least want to make sure that our city officials understand when hiring remote workers for comp coverage, it doesn't make a difference where they're working. But when we talk about injuries, that is an area that, you know, at least the worker has to be in the course and scope of their employment. They have to be in furthering the affairs of the employer. You know, they have to be being paid. So that's something that we look at when we're determining if the coverage applies to a certain injury.
And one of the things that you and I have talked about in the past is many city employees and other local government employees really were always remote work, and that was even before the pandemic, even though you didn't call it that. So, for example, police officers, EMS, firefighters, our street department workers, our public works workers, our animal control people, all the folks who are out in the field every day, those folks never really changed in regards to what their coverage looked like.
You're correct. The coverage doesn't just stay at a location. The coverage follows the employees wherever they go, as long as they're furthering the affairs of the employer. And, you know, there are opportunities within workers' compensation injuries or claims for injuries where an employee may deviate from the work that they're doing that day. There may be some other situations that would take them out of coverage, where if they were injured, it might not be part of their work-related injury. But for the most part, the coverage follows the employee, whether they're working remotely or working at an office.
I guess what the bottom line would be is, if a city has a paid employee and they're doing something in the course and scope of their employment and they're hurt in some way, they should submit that to the pool as a workers' comp claim and let us do the investigating and decide whether or not it's a compensable injury and go from there. Does that make sense? Is that the right way to do it?
Yes, that would be the right way to do it. You know, the by sending in a claim, that doesn't mean that the claim would be covered or that it would cost the member anything to have us investigate to determine if the injury occurred in the course and scope of employment.
And the ultimate goal of that investigation is to ensure that our local government employees are taken care of. If they have a compensable claim, if they were injured at work, we want to be sure that they're taken care of and or their families taken care of, if that's the case. And that's what we try to do every day.
Yes, that is correct. The pool handles, you know, over 11,000 workers' compensation claims per year. So, you know, we're here for our members, and we do want them to send in the claims as they have notice so that we can get a timely investigation and initiate benefits in a timely fashion.
Thanks for being here, Phil. When we come back, we'll do our action items for this episode. Okay, let's do your action items for this episode. First, take into account Melinda's comments about making a remote worker feel part of your organization. Being sure they know what's expected of them and how to fit into your organizational culture is so important. Next, be ready to issue spot the legal issues when you're hiring a remote worker, and keep in mind that hiring someone from out of state has a whole set of challenges that you'll need legal advice on. Also, don't forget that you can't just call somebody a, quote, independent contractor and avoid complying with employment laws. Finally, make sure the employee's workspace is safe and ergonomic. Do that to avoid workers' comp claims that Phil talked about, just like you would in an office environment. I'll also add one extra very important tidbit to this one. Cybersecurity is always a concern, whether you're in the office or out, so you'll need to make extra certain that remote workers understand your policies and best practices to avoid a cyber attack. Okay, that's it. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again soon.
To review written materials associated with the presentation or to ask Scott a question, please visit www.tmlirp.org and click on the Stronger Together podcast link. Please remember that the information in this episode is provided for informational purposes only and doesn't constitute legal advice. We recommend that you review the podcast and the accompanying written materials with your attorney prior to taking action.